Here we go.
They call themselves
Heroes Asylum.
Morons.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, issue 160.
Yay!
Yay, 160.
We made it. Where's the confetti?
So, guys, we are... You'll have to excuse the voice right now. I'm going to...
Excuse Jones with that frog throat going on.
Yeah, right, I'm trying to go with for the sexy smoker voice right now, but so other than me like losing my voice, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Pretty well. Just a relaxing night, you know, enjoying a day off of my day job. And then, you know, enjoying doing my night job. So, you know, just hanging out and doing the same thing we always do, dude.
Nice. Well, we're gonna do something different. Since we came back, we've been doing the themes like we usually do. But we usually would do like movies, TVs, and stuff along those lines. This month, we're doing fantasy. Started it off with fantasy movies. This time around, we're not going to go TV or anything like that. We're going to go fantasy villains. And basically, top fantasy villains. This is kind of open form, I guess, in a way, because it's like, you don't want to lock yourself into a movie, but a lot of times some of the best villains are movies. So I think I have maybe like one or two that might be outside of that, but for the most part, they are.
I think we're going to have similar lists.
Yeah. Cause
again,
unless you dig deep and like do like extra deep cuts, which.
Yeah. And that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to like dig really deep. I think I got a couple. That might be considered deep, but
I try to like try to stick to the fantasy realm, but not like not your swords and sorcery villains, like as far as fantasy goes. But try to expand it. I tried at least to try to expand it out. I did my best, and I kept slapping my hand, so I didn't do it. But I stayed away from the books because I know
I was gonna say if the books were included, you would win by a mile.
they kept popping up. I'm like, no, pull that back. Because honestly, a lot of fantasy villains, some of the best ones are literally from novels. You know, they're the translations of those or the adaptations that we see. So,
yeah, like recently I was looking at a TikTok, yes, kids, and it was about Dexter, like the Dexter novels, and how they had never introduced this one. He's a really good character, Dr. Demacus, like, and he basically is like a cannibal. Like you see, like he eats his victims, and like he has a tough time with Dexter. Like they haven't introduced him in the show yet, and they say he's one of the better villains out there.
I think that they sort of blended him in the show. I don't think they're going to do. Yeah, I think they. I kind of lost track of Dexter like years and years ago, but I thought that they were blending him in because they do that a lot. They'll take two villains and then sort of blend them in and just give them one name, but this one has a dual traits. So they may have done that because I thought like early on that there was a cannibal that he had.
No, there was no cannibal. There was like, you know, he had got people who were like close to it, like his brother who like, you know, took limbs off. He cut off the limbs and he froze them. I guess that would be considered close, but
yeah,
eat it, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, that sometimes they'll do that. Alrighty, man. Well, let's hop into this. Let you go first.
Okay. That'd be cool. So my first one is probably like one of the first ones I seen on screen. And it was from a toy line. And that's Skeletor, man, from Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
I mean, he's considered a fantasy villain. And he was one of the first ones that I saw. I mean, I love the old MOTU series. And look, he was cheesy, I admit. And I think Jones would admit as well. But I think for me later on, like there was another series, and I think we keep talking about it because it's the one you recommended to me, was the Masters of the Universe that was on like, I think it was a 2002, I believe, or 2007.
Something,
not sure the date, if you could check that.
Early 2000s.
But like the way they did that series, they fleshed out Skeletor and actually made him a character. Like, oh, he had a backstory where he came from. You know, he wasn't always like the skeleton and bones. He was a dude that was like the friend of He-Man's father as king. I think he was like his brother. I'm not sure. But his story got kind of fleshed out and made him a better character. And when his turn came, he kind of, you know, he understood it. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember that. Didn't they also do that in the Kevin Smith He-Man?
Did they show some
of that as well? Yeah, because I thought that was great. Because I know you and I had this talk years ago when like they were rolling out the Joker movie, and how I was like, you don't want to you don't want to sympathize with the villain. You know, you don't want to see kind of where he came from and why he's this way. He's that way because that's just the way he is.
He was, yeah.
And I kind of like with the Skeletor one, it kind of made sense. It kind of like helped you understand his motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, sometimes villains are just villains. I will go back to it. I know. I mean, you're a massive, massive fan of the Dark Knight trilogy, and like massive. Just that one line from Alfred, of you know, some people just want to watch the world burn. To me, that's the Joker. That's he just wants to see chaos for chaos' sake.
Yeah, and just because he can do it. Yeah.
And that's why I was always against them doing the Joker movies. I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't give him a reason.
He's better as that unexplained entity. Yeah. And the minute you start explaining him, he loses his lore. And that's what happens. And I hate like the Joker movie, and I don't hate it as much as you do. But I don't hate it.
I just wish they didn't give him sympathetics. That's all. Like I love the movie. I think the movie was done well. Thought the acting was great. Writing was great. Just you're giving him sympathy.
I get it. I mean, I like I said, I saw it a different way. I understood like where they were going. They were trying to make him sort of a victim, but you know, he really wasn't. But you know,
yeah, especially towards the end, once you realize everything that's been going on, it's like, oh, okay.
And that was cool. I was like, oh, yeah.
And then they really made him a victim when they did the sequel.
Oof. Man.
Our friend Bob, who's usually likes to watch kind of our same vibe on movies. Mm. Oh man, he was like, yeah, no, I don't know what that was.
I don't think they know what when they made it. Like, it's just, I think when I told you I watched, I was like, dude, this is garbage. Like it is trash. I mean, they basically, when they made that second Joker film, it was basically like, fuck you, fans, and that's basically what it was.
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
I was like, no. Like,
so Jesus. My next one. And it's from a movie you and I both love. It's a classic, it's an 80s movie, and a very original character from what I remember. But David Lopan.
Trouble in
Little China. I mean,
man,
he doesn't fall under like the generic one because it's more Chinese fantasy and Japanese fantasy. I meant, but just his story, his backstory, and just. The drama between him as the aging, whatever corpse thing he was, to being the powerful wizard, and just how between him and
Egg Shen.
Between him and in that battle between those two, and the fact that this character was so well done that he continued past Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes, he did.
Like David Lopan guest starred, like he would surprise you in other areas. He was the 2012 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle series. He was in there.
Didn't he play Splinter?
No, not the voice actor. The character David Lopan has shown up several times throughout like, you know, the history of TV and movies.
I remember a comic that I bought years ago. It was like a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China, and Burton and Lopan had become friends. It was really strange, and they were fighting some other giant Chinese deity. It's really wacky. I was like, if you can find it, I would read it. It's like it's pretty silly, but it's kind of cool at the same time. So, but yeah, what a villain he was. Like prosthetics on his face when he's the old man, like, you know, how could this little, you know, weak guy look like a powerful dude? And when he makes that change, he changes. Just very cool. And that Egyptian lore was cool. Everything about him was just cool. And plus, you know, his henchmen, which like a prequel for basically Mortal Kombat. I mean, if you don't think they got some ideas for Mortal Kombat by watching Big Trouble in Little China,
Lightning is straight up Raiden.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of elements borrowed to help Mortal Kombat. Thank you very much. But, yeah, what a cool villain, man. And, like, the way they made him so menacing, so tall, too. That was one of the bigger things. and his elemental, basically he wanted these two girls with green eyes. I'm not sure why. Well, it was weird. Like he sacrificed one.
Yeah, he had to kill one, and then he wanted to keep the other one.
Yeah, that was what, like marry one and then kill the other one, which is weird, but
hey, he was doing Mary, what was it, Mary fuck kill?
He basically was.
But yeah, no, yeah, just like I said, just I think I've always liked that story and just how he is created. And just like I said, you get it just enough of the backstory to understand what he is, why he's the way he is. And then of course, like
I remember he had like his backstory was really cool, fascinating. I think Ekshin told like he was talking to the guys about like, oh, he was like thrown down by the Japanese gods, like they cast him out and like they took his body away. It was really interesting, all that lore. I was like, oh man, like this guy is a badass.
they took a lot of his backstory from Chinese mythology, but like I said, I think again just amazing. And so my only downfall of this, and the only thing I hated, was his death. Was just so
lame. So lame. Like, after all that build, that's how he goes out?
Yeah, not knife to the head. And I was like, really? That's where we're going? Okay.
I was like, shouldn't he went out like a more badass way? Yeah. Like getting electrocuted or something? Like, yeah. But,
cool. All right, so what do you got next?
I got a controversial one because I think you're going to fight me on this one for this character I'm going to choose. It's sort of like a post-apocalyptic fantasy sort of future. All right? So I'm not sure if it's going to fall in there, but I'm going to fight for it anyway. And that's the Duke. The Duke from Escape from New York.
We'll let it slide.
You let it slide?
Yeah, that's more... post-apocalyptic, you know. I see what you're trying to do your post-apocalyptic show here. I see what you're trying to do. That's okay.
I gotta throw like little nuggets in there, man. So I was able to slide this one in. That is me teasing something of a post-apocalyptic one. But dude, what a cool, fun movie and a fun villain as well. Played by Isaac Hayes, I believe, and you had Kurt Russell in there as the awesome Snake Plissken. I mean, I think Lee Van Cleef is in this movie. And if you watch any of the old westerns, you know, he was like in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. He was always the bad guy. And I think the Shogun had a TV series a long time ago, and he was on there as well. But like, he was like the colonel. He sends him out to get the president's daughter, or the president actually has crash land in New York City, which is a post-apocalyptic world now. He has to go in and get him, and the Duke is basically the guy who runs that whole New York area and everything he does to Kurt. And like, it's pretty nutty. Like I said, it's Isaac Hayes. Plus, the music is awesome. We've always talked about music making a movie and a villain. But the Duke is just fun, man. He's fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. That he was one of the more interesting characters in there. I mean, and when I say that because of a very colorful cast of characters.
Yes, yes.
Because not only that, what was you had to get the taxi cab driver.
Ernest Borgnine, right?
Yeah. Ernest Borgnine. Then you had the girl and her boyfriend, husband, whatever they were.
The girl, she was in a lot of 80s horror movies. So I know who you're talking about there.
But yeah, like I said, just the cast and just seeing like Carpenter's work in turning that dark and just like desolate world. Yeah, definitely not a fantasy guy, but I like what you're going. But yeah, no, really great movie. I absolutely loved it. Fan of the sequels. I know a lot of folks didn't like the sequel. But...
Oh man, God bless your soul. That sequel is terrible. Oh, I was so let down. I mean, the minute I saw him on a surfboard, I go, "This is over, dude." Like, you fucking like, how could you make Escape from New York so rad and awesome and influential, and then you make Escape from L.A., which is like nothing like that. It's just so goofy. They make Kurt Russell goofy.
It's L.A. I don't know. I know you haven't been to L.A., but dude, that is L.A. That straight up is L.A.
I don't know. It was just too goofy for me, man. Way too goofy.
There's a guy on YouTube you should watch. I'm going to try to find him for you. But yeah, he really delves into L.A. and talks about like the importance of that movie and like what they did. Mm-hmm. Granted, it was still pretty much a copy of New York when you really get down to the bare bones of the plot.
It's basically the same movie as the first one, honestly. It's just L.A., like, really nothing different.
I mean, you got a movie with Stacy Keach, so it can't be all that bad.
Yeah, Mike Hammer. Good old Stacy Keach.
I always think of him as Titus's dad.
Oh my God, that's right. He was such a dick, but he was funny. Oh, good old Titus.
Yes.
So what you got there, sir?
I've got one that you were introduced to not that long ago, maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago. God, I'm trying to remember how long ago it was. Now, some of the villains I have, that some folks may not think that they're villains, but they're how they made me feel when I watched them or read them. And this one, I've done both. And that's a Joffrey Baratheon.
Nice.
That little shit just was just disgusting. You know, just like just everything about him was off. And just the point of once he got what was coming to him. Because I remember you when you were doing the podcast. Oh, you were
I
like,
was just
like, going
to
oh,
reference
hey,
that.
Son of a bitch. Dude, and I'm just like, wait, dude. It's coming.
Ooh. Yeah. There were many a nights when I was rewatching Game of Thrones. By the way, check the archives. We do have a podcaster. That I would text Jones and I would be like, dude, I fucking hate this guy. Like, when is he going to get it? Like, every day, oh my God, he did this? Like, dude, tell me he's going to get it soon. And then you were just like, hey, he's going. I'm like, fuck, when? And then when it finally happened, I was like, oh, good. Was so happy. And then after him came somebody else, which is weird, I had on my list. So you probably could figure out who it was.
Yeah, but nobody could be like that. That, like I said, that was one of those characters, like, my skin crawled. I just like just wanted him over.
Ugh.
And it's funny, it's like he never won anything for that role.
which is crazy.
Yeah, he was nominated, everything like that. And honestly, because of that role, he had to step back from Hollywood because that character affected so many people so many ways. When people would see him out,
yeah,
they hated him.
Which, I mean, proves how good he did the role, too. I mean, that's how good he was, how convincing he was that I actually freaking hate him. And I do. I was like, fuck, I hate this guy. Mm-hmm. And I would probably hate him, too. I was like, dude, you're him. You're him.
Well, I just recently, like, you and I were talking offline. I just finally getting caught up on The Sandman. And, like, he plays Puck in The Sandman.
Oh, it does?
Season
does
2.
He?
That's him. Yeah. Like, so he's gotten back into acting. But I think that one's, like...
Oh, okay. I think that is him. All right. Huh.
Yep. So yeah, he's on there like I think 5 episodes or something like that. But he, like I said, he finally came back. But I love the fact that because you didn't realize it was him, he's sort of playing a Joffrey kind of character. Like, I mean, because Puck's a douche. I mean, you just got to go with that. But yeah, no, like I said, he took a break. He went and did like a lot of theater in between the time from like when he ended there. He did a couple other things. He was the kid from Raining Fire and Batman Begins.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
I mean, he's been around. Like I said, I think just because he did such a great job, and I know a lot. I don't know, but I've read a lot of characters and actors that has happened. They're like people are hating me, especially in this day and age with social media, that they'll just rag on them and they'll because of a character they played. Listen, they're there to play the character. That's not them.
Yeah, chill out, dude. Separate like artist from like the real person. Like he's not that much of a dick. I mean, because if he was real, I'd kill him. Oh, just a horrific cut. Just
yeah,
ugh.
But no, just like I said, yeah, I think probably it was one of George R. R. Martin's like best characters as far as like hatred. There are ones you want to hate in that book series. This one you just loathe and just like that needs to end now.
Yeah, because you know who he was. Just an arrogant little, just a little fucking prick. That's all he was. Is he and a prick who had power, which was even worse. He was petty. He was a little bitch. He was whiny. Oh, he was all those things and just so smug that I just wanted him to die. Like, please, somebody get him. Anybody.
All right, Mass. What you got next?
I got a fun one. these were probably like my favorite late 90s, early 2000s movies. And because they were fun, they were on that swashbuckling tip, which I love so much. Imhotep from the Mummy series, 1 and 2.
Oh, Imhotep, yeah.
Yeah, he was just a fun, cool, typical summer villain, dude. Like, you know, this immortal priest comes back. He's the god of the dead, you know, all powerful, especially the special effects in those two movies where they showed like his silhouette face in the water and in the sand. I was like, back then, I mean, cheesy back now, but groundbreaking back then. Except for the Scorpion King when they had the rock on there. That was horrific. Ugh, that was just misstep. But a fun villain, like I said, that's so good they brought him back for the sequel. You know, when they had the rock in there, and like they basically, and he was still like the main villain of that movie as well. Like Scorpion King, they didn't show up till like later on. But cool, fun character, nice lore too. Like if you know the story of Imhotep, and I think this is done in like with, you know, Egyptian mythology, like it's pretty accurate of where he came from as a priest. You know, he fell in love with the king's daughter. It was forbidden.
No, not at all.
Oh, do explain.
Imhotep was a high priest in Egypt, but he was not that villainous character. He just was one of the high priests that helped design some of the pyramids. It's really about, okay. Yeah.
See, they
took it and they embellished greatly.
Well, thank you for telling me that. I didn't know. I thought that story was real. I was like, oh, okay. He's a badass priest, you know, fell in love and
definitely badass priest, but yeah, not that badass. Yeah, now, like I said, honestly, I don't see him as a true villain in a way because of the reasons he's doing it is for love.
Yeah.
Out of that movie, the worst villain is fucking Benny.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That slimy little shit to me was way worse. Imhotep's like, I'm getting back to power because I want to find my true love who was taken from me because, you know, they did this, and this. And of course, that story carries over to the second one, which he becomes a little bit more heartless in a way. Because there are certain things that he'll do through the movie. And then like at the very end, he realizes, you know, he becomes a heartbroken character because, well, she's not there to save him.
Yeah, that's ultimately what did him in.
Like I said, to me, it's a heartbreaking character. I don't see him as
you're making me change my mind.
Just I don't see him as like the villainous type, except for just the nature of I'm a mummy and I need to come back to life. So shit's in my way. I'm going to do it. Like I said, I think Benny was more of a douchebag than.
Benny was so douchey. He betrayed Rick. Then he betrayed him. Came back, went with the mummy, and dude, was a dick. Here's another one. I'm glad when he bit it, when those beetles, I was like, oh, good. Oh, yeah, you get him. So, what you got there, sir?
I'm going to go more contemporary. For some reason, I just feel like staying contemporary lately. And I don't know if you've ever really watched, or well, I know you haven't read it, but I've watched the Harry Potter series. Have you kept up at all in the movies at all?
Yeah, I've seen all the movies.
Okay. There's one character, and it's not who you think it is, that is the most despicable.
Oh my God, we're gonna have the same one, aren't we?
Or are we talking about? Dolores Umbridge? I think I know where you're
going. Yeah,
you got.
I have her on my list too. You know what? Touche. If I could give you a fist pound. Well done.
Yeah, she just was the worst character ever. And like I said, I'm basing a lot of this on just like the emotion I felt as I'm watching her. Like she just the path she took, her physical description, just this snotty, snooty, just like, I'm better than you, but I can do what I, yeah, I felt like she was probably one of the most compelling villains. Voldemort had his thing. Yes, get that. But for her to portray herself as something she's not, you know, I do this, I do this, I'm better, look, I'm better than you because of who I am. But in the long run, you see what she was, and there are real deep down dark, you know, how she was underneath. And like I said, just watching what she did to the kids and just throughout just all of it.
Fucking torture them, man. Like an elitist prick, dude. Mm-hmm. Like she's on the same vibe Like, oh, like, I just hated her. Like, oh, like, pink dress and that, like, just snobby attitude. And, like, felt so good when they got her in the end. Like, I love, like, that. You know how they have those things on the wall with the magic stuff? And they'll show, like, in the background, like, what happens, like, right away. And they'll say, like, you know, like, in jail, Dolores Umbridge. And I was like, oh, yes, finally.
Ugh. But it's funny. It's, like, it's never really truly addressed in the movie, but in the books, she is actually, she's one of the Mudbloods because her mother and her brother don't have powers. But when she gets sorted by the Sorting Hat at the beginning of her schooling career, she was put into the Slytherin house. You would think her, you know, persona and how she looks and carries herself, she would have been a little bit more, you know, another house. But, you know, she was put, you know, put in that house. And again, this is one of those other actors that, you know, I could see her having issues you're going around because of what she did and how she did it, you know, to those characters. And you got to realize we're talking about a generation that was raised on Harry Potter. You know, now, you know, these are all, you know, millennials and Gen Zers right now, and they grew up on this. And like, I could see her running into these people and just like, I'm surprised she still got a career, because I wouldn't be able to watch anything she was in.
Oh, because
I'd be like, screw you, bitch.
Oh, yeah. Just another one that took that next level of just like hatred. Like, oh, you will do what I say. Like, oh, yeah, I think she was somehow worse than Voldemort.
But again, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's still a character. But there, you know, like she, what'd she go off and end up doing? She was in Downton Abbey. So, I mean, I know she did that. Also, yeah, Downton Abbey, Paddington. She was also in Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Great movie, if nobody's ever seen that one.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I like them.
All right, man. So what you got next?
I got one from actually two movies, actually. Well, it's the same movie, just redone twice. And it's the same character by two different people. And that's Dune. We're going Faye Rotha, the first, the Austin Butler and the Sting version. Those two. They made like two different versions of the character. I think like the newer one by Austin Butler was more like threatening, and like the Sting one was more like colorful. But both entertaining. Both freaking entertaining. And if you look at that second Dune movie, he kind of made that movie to me. Like, without him, like, he was just that intimidating force. And he wasn't in the movie that long. I think like towards the end, and then basically that's it. But he was like the main guy, and you felt how fearful he was. And then you go back to the 80s one, and like, he was threatening in a way, but, you know, like in a more colorful way, more 80s way. But still kind of fun. And I always dug for both versions, honestly.
With the 80s version, obviously, because they were limited in time. That's one thing I'll give, you know, Villanova's version. Everybody's like, oh, they're so long. And this is how they're supposed to be, especially with that world, and to build it up and to show those characters in the way that they are, I think was perfect. Yeah, and you got to see more of that.
They built more, yeah. Because, like you said, they didn't have time in that first film, but like the second one, like, yeah, they flushed him out a lot more, made him more dope. So just like, in both versions, like I said, they both work. What you got there, sir?
Oh, 1 second here. My system's taking a moment.
Okay. We'll just pause for a second.
All right, so I'm going to go, and I think you and I have talked about it. I don't know if you've ever really watched it all. Yeah, no, you haven't, because you and I talked about this like a month ago. I'm going to go cartoon, fantasy cartoon.
Okay.
This is for, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh,
one of the characters is named Princess Azula.
Oh,
she is queen bitch in this. She is the crown princess of the Fire Nation. She's like the daughter of the Fire Lord, who was the main protagonist. He is the emperor in this world. Like, he's always there. He's always kind of pulling the strings, but he's never truly involved until
towards the end.
Yeah, right towards the end. And her brother is Zuko, who literally does probably one of the coolest character growth that I've ever seen, where he starts obsessed, wants nothing but the Avatar. And as the story goes on, you see his growth, you see his change, you see him becoming something, you know, better. But like his description of his sister is, she always lies. And that's just how she is. She is the, we talked about Dolores Umbridge being like this snooty. She is snooty, but then she is a full on bitch at the end. To the point where she literally loses her mind with the rage that she feels for the Avatar, with the rage that she feels for her brother, who's basically seen the light and has changed. She's got some of the most colorful, like, I don't want to call them henchmen, but friends that sort of help her, because they're scared of her. Like, her friends are there. They've known her since she was a kid, and she's just progressively gotten worse and worse and worse. And they basically do, they're scared of her, but they're still there with her, and they're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to kind of step away while you have your little moment. But
Sounds terrible. She sounds like borderline psycho almost.
There are moments when she does come off a psycho. If you ever get a chance to get into it, I know you and I've talked, you kind of want to check it out. But her journey, her destruction. A lot of times when you see a villain, you see like they have their aha moments. They have their eye opening, and they try to make the turn for the best. You know, they have their Kylo moments, but
yeah.
Like she does not. She has no saving grace.
Irredeemable.
Yeah, no irredeemable qualities at all. She's got like some of the most interesting choices, and just the voice alone is just. You can hear the bitch in her. I mean, it's nothing to do for the actress. I mean, the actress, Greta Lissel, she did an amazing job on her voice. And but just for a kid's show to have that anger and that personality there, I thought she just great character as far as like evil.
You're making me want to watch this show now.
Well, you're going to want to watch it. You've been wanting to watch it for a while. I don't know why you keep dragging your feet. Like, you have a life.
I know. It sucks. Like, I was the same one with Game of Thrones, too. And I was like, fine.
This has been off longer than Game of Thrones. I think you're past,
I don't know.
You're past the coolness. That now you'll just be like retro and catching up. Like, yeah, you know, I'm here now. Oh yeah, just for the voice actors, and just I don't know how much you follow like the cons in other areas. I follow Michaela. She was the voice of Toph, which is like this rough and tough earthbender. And I follow her on Twitter and TikTok, and like I love watching her go around to the different conventions, and like that these guys all get together. And I think one of the best ones was in one of the episodes, Toph, who's this rock bender, is trying to like prove that she's a badass. She has to go against a bunch of other ones, and she has to go against a character named the Boulder, who has an eyebrow thing happening.
Oh,
if you get the Boulder, the rock, the eyebrow. Uh-huh. So literally, he's like a take off of the Rock. But you want to know who voices him?
Who?
Mick Foley.
Oh God.
So they never met each other. Like they did their recordings like separate. It wasn't until literally like not too far off, like a few years ago, they actually got a chance to meet each other. Now they, whenever they're at the at any of the conventions at the same time, they get together and have a moment. And like,
oh, that's cool.
And like most people, folks don't realize that was Mick Foley. Like, you know.
I had no idea it was Mick Foley.
They'll come over and like she'll sign an autograph. She goes, you know, the Boulder's right over there, or he'll go, hey, you know, Toph's over there. But yeah, no, it's like I said, it's definitely a fun show, and like I said, it's a fun community outside of it. So,
like I said, you're making me want to check this out now. So
I'm telling you, I don't know why you keep dragging your feet.
I don't know.
I mean, Do we have to say one thing you always say? Oh, Mike, you're right.
Not now, dude. Not now.
Too soon?
So I guess I'm going to go next. This villain was actually from a fantasy flip, actually one of my favorite fantasy movies of all time. Big part of my childhood and probably a big part of Mike's or other people who listen to the show. And that's the Nothing from The Neverending Story. You never saw him. You never saw what it was. But it was more of like it was just there. And it was in like when you see that movie, it has the wolf. And the wolf is a terrifying villain, too. But like the Nothing, like you never see it. But it's just like what it is. It just engulfs, makes everything the Nothing. That's all. It's nothingness, emptiness. And I always thought like, God damn. Like, and you sort of see him sort of at the end when he's engulfing things, I guess you want to call him that. But like to me as a kid that age, he was terrifying. Like, oh, shit, nothing. That's, that'd be kind of like, that's frightening to fade into nothingness.
Yeah. Yeah. That movie. That movie gave me long time trauma. Long time. I'm not even talking about the one scene that everybody's heartbroken on. I just, just in general, just like, just the trauma. I mean, that is not a movie that kids should have been watching.
That was a downer. If you think about it, the whole movie's down. Like when he first meets everybody and he's going around, like everybody has a problem. The stone guy has a problem. This guy has a problem. Like everybody's sad. Like, oh, what's happening? It's over. Like they've all given up. Like the turtle is the best one. I don't care anymore. they're so emo.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, just the concept of it, like I said, the one scene that broke everybody's heart with the horse. And then, you just see like, just everything else. I mean, like I said, a great book. If you've never read the book, it's a really great book. But it's just like as a movie. And I don't know what happened because there were a lot of movies when we were growing up in the 80s.
Just like this.
Those were just, that's trauma. I mean, then they wonder why we are, the Gen X is the way we are.
I mean, we watched the movies.
Look. We watched, but we watched it at 8 and 9 years old.
There was no parental guards, man. No, if there was a will, there was a way. We were going
to
watch them.
Yeah, my grandparents, like, I'd go visit them on the summer, and they're like, hey, go to the video rental place, and I'd get movies, or they'd bring me something. I go, oh, this is a kid's book. And I'd watch it, and I'm, like, down in the basement, curled up in a fetal position, contemplating my life.
and we were allowed to take these movies, which, like, they were there.
Oh, yeah.
Like they could have stopped it anytime.
No.
Mom and dad never did.
No.
So it's on you guys.
What you got next, sir? I'm actually swinging back around because I felt this story, this world had several villainous characters. But again, I go based off of feel. And this person just like, just destroyed it for me. Bellatrix Lestrange, played by Helen Bonham Carter from Harry Potter. Again, sorry.
You got two Potters in there.
Yeah, because I mean that they say what you will about Rawlings, but she knew how to make some pretty wicked villains.
Yeah.
And especially when you look at what she is, what she's going against. She's going against children and just the torture and everything that she puts these people through, killing her own cousin just because he's there. I mean, just so many different things. Like she was like Umbridge was bad because she was in power. Bellatrix was just in love with power, like in that, the dark side of it. And just seeing what the things that she did, she was a huge impact on, not just one character, but several characters throughout the movie that made them the way they were.
Yeah, she tortured Harry too, like verbally and stuff like that. She's the one that
put Neville's parents into the trance. Like, so that's why he was living with his aunt or his grandmother.
She was very powerful, man. Like and she was crazy too. Yep. She was just freaking. She was insane. And
but like I said, she was the only one that was. Like literally in love with Voldemort.
Yeah, like literally, did the slave of Voldemort. Like basically, and when he finally showed up, she was subservient to him. Like she couldn't do anything, like nothing. It's too bad because she was a really wicked character, man. Like, I love the way how she tortured everybody. And powerful too. Yeah. Like, I think like Dumbledore had problems with her, like when they did the wand fights and stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, her finale I thought was amazing. Just like very a la Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
You know, so, indeed, but yeah,
the end.
But yeah, very, like I said, yeah, another great villain. Again, like I said, J.K. Rowling knows how to make some great villains, and just like want you to hate them even more.
Oh. And we hate all of them.
Yes. So what do you got for your last one there?
Well, my last one, it's funny you say that because I'm sticking to the Harry Potter world. And he's also a villain. And it's not Voldemort, neither. So guess what? No Voldemort on this list. And that is the Harry Potter series, the Dementors, man. Those things, like, they don't talk. They don't speak. They're just these dead things. They look freakish. Like, just the grim, like, they don't have a figure. They're basically just hooded. And you see blackness and nothing else, and they float and they fly, and they screech. They're terrifying. I remember the first time I saw them, you know, I had a game, and my daughter, actually, we had this whole day out. I think it was a Harry Potter game. I'm not sure. I think it is a Harry Potter game. The Dementors are in it. Terrifying. Even in the game, I just like, dude, I ain't playing this. The creepiness about them, man, the lore, like, you find out later on their story, where they came from, and like, ugh. It's creepy, 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 but great villains in that Harry Potter series.
Yes. The Dementors, especially what they... And we get a tame version in the movies. So,
like, really?
Yeah. We get a tame version of what they are and what they, like, represent.
Can't imagine how they get worse.
Well, again, they're literally just lack of happiness, you know, the lack of light, you know, and they just, that's one of the things that, like, you know, just because when they come by, they're just sucking like the joy and the life out of you.
Yeah, they're just like, just emptiness, nothingness. It's like, that's all they are. That's what made them creepy, especially their design, man. Like you said, J.K. Rowling makes some really good villains, and none of them named Voldemort, dude. None of us had Voldemort on our list.
No, like,
and
I said,
he's probably like you know. Yeah.
He's
so we got three Harry Potters, none of the Voldemort.
I said, with Voldemort, he was, like I said, he was the essence of evil, but like it was more about, like I said, how they made me feel. Voldemort never made me feel that way until like the very end, like the last movie. Like these other characters literally busted the door in and just like gave me the middle finger and like we're here to hurt your feelings. And that like really helped, you know, had a very and that makes me impactful when it comes to that, especially when a character makes that kind of impact to you.
Yeah, agreed. For me, like the build to Voldemort was better than the actual result, you know, for me. Because I like how they built them through every movie. Like they mentioned this, they mentioned that, and they got it cranked up, I think, after 4. And then you see more and more and more and more. And when he shows up, it's cool, but it's not like the other ones, like you said. Like the 3 we had on our list, I think, were more, you know, holy shit, like impactful. It's like, oh, damn. And all in different ways, too.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So my last one, I'm going old school.
How old are you going?
Old school. Original. One of the originals. I'm going the Witch King of Angmar, the Lord of the Nazguls from Lord of the Rings.
Ooh, again. I had somebody from Lord of the Rings on my list, too.
What's that?
No, I had like somebody else from Lord of the Rings on my list as well. So
I'm surprised that we didn't throw in a little bit more, but yeah, like they're probably good 4 like great villains in this one, but this guy just like he starts off, like he sets the tone in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because he's the first one that's after, you know, he's after the ring, and he's after Frodo and the rest of the gang as they're leaving the Shire. You know, he's one of the first villains we see. We see his power on the Ring Bearer, and like I said, just the control of everything dark. I do understand like the source of that goes all the way back to Saruman, but just his power. And in us his control over like the Nine Rings and how, and also their backstory of that they were once men. They were,
it's corrupted by the ring. Yeah. That was the big thing. Yeah. Corruption turned them into that. And he was like the worst one of them. They've mentioned in this, Lord of the Rings series. I'm not sure if you watched it, but, they mentioned a couple characters who could become, you know, the Nazgul, the Witch King, you know, and like, it's going to be him. It's going to be him.
I know by then, when this takes place, they're already, the Nazguls are already there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. They've been around for quite some time. Yeah. I think if I'm remembering the Ring of Power, I think that takes place like a couple hundred years before The Hobbit, I believe. I can't, maybe 1,000. But the Nazguls and these guys have been around since Sauron was since Sauron was still human in still human form.
Oh shit. Okay, they go back that far. Alright. I didn't know that. Like, oh okay. Shit.
But yeah, and then of course just the saying, you know, no living man may ever, you know, hinder me in the books. That's what how he says it in the books, and you know, just says, well, I'm no man, basically, you know.
No, he isn't. Like his design is so cool too. Like the way they made him with the sharp edges, and I think he's flying on a dragon, I believe, or something like that.
Eventually he does switch over. You know, at first he's horseback riding around. But eventually they do switch over to the dragons.
Yeah, because they tease him throughout the first two films. You don't really see him to the third, I believe.
Oh, no, like you see him in the first movie. He's the one that's tracking down the hobbits. They're the ones that go to the Hobbiton.
Oh, I thought that was the ring wraiths or something that were following.
Those are the Nazguls.
Oh, the okay.
Same thing. Yeah, same thing. Same title.
I don't know why I said that.
But yeah,
it's
that's
the same thing.
Yeah, like I said, yeah, the Witch King eventually does get him like a winged steed and like, you know, to rally the troops and everything. But yeah, that's, like I said, yeah, just one of the, they fall in line as a group very similar to what you mentioned, the mentors. You know, that they're there, they're sucking the life, they just take everything out.
Yeah, that's all they are. And they're powerful too. Very powerful. And those things, and the screech, I think he had a screech, from his dragon. Yeah, oh, that screech is like, oh man. Like I said, he's already terrifying. You add that screech, that puts him over the top. Like, oh, whoa.
All right, guys. So, well, that is our villain list.
Interesting
list. We're gonna have next show. We're gonna have an interesting one. I think we're going to be doing sidekicks. So yeah. Yep. So we'll be doing the fantasy sidekicks. Because I think some of the most creative and colorful characters are the fantasy sidekicks, because they can fall under two areas. You know, they can fall under just as a helper, comic relief. You have so many variables, and you can have some sidekicks, you know, that become heroes in their own right. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see the journey. And then after that, we're going to be doing heroes and weapons, like combined together, talking about the heroes and their legendary weapons. So,
and
if you
with that, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that one's
it's going to be fun.
So if you guys are interested in joining the fantasy thing, just let us know. You got anything going on, man?
No, not much, man. Let's get out of here.
All right, man. You guys have a good week.
See ya.